was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, Pastor Phil, I really feel like God is really wanting me to kind of get back in the gym. I really feel like I want to get back in the gym and start getting back in shape and doing all these things. And how many know, whenever you have a friend or somebody that you know that starts talking to you about going to the gym, you automatically think they're going to ask you to go with them, right? So I started to think about all the excuses of to why I can't go with him. But as he kept talking, I just asked him very clearly. I just said, hey, man, so why don't you just go? And he said, oh, man, you don't understand. It's the walk to the gym. And I'm a problem solver. So I said, why don't you just take a car and then you're done? And he said, no, you don't understand. It's the walk from my house to the car. And then it's the walk from the car to the gym. He said, sometimes I'm good. I'll walk from the house to the car. But on my way to the gym, I start thinking, well, since I'm up this early anyway, I might as well just run some errands real quick and I'll go to the gym later, and I never end up going. So as he was talking, I started to think about what he was thinking about. I started to think about the thoughts that probably each of us have in different areas of our life when we're going on this walk in life. Maybe there's a dream or vision that's been planted on the inside, and we start asking ourselves, is it really worth it? Will this really work? Can I do this? Is this even going to be able to be possible? The same questions that he was asking himself, I'm quite sure we were asking and have asked in our minds about different areas of our life. Today I want to talk to you about that walk, about that obedience of the walk, the walking this thing out from what God has planted inside of you, this dream, this vision that he has for you. Now, this could be something big that God has asked. Maybe he's asked you to start a business. Maybe he's asked you to step out in faith or give this or give that. Or maybe he simply said, why don't you forgive that person who's done you wrong? Has God ever asked you to forgive somebody and you start thinking, there's no way I can forgive them? Like four honest people in here. All right. Very cool. But we start thinking about all this stuff. So today, the walk. I want to talk to you about in Acts 9. And to set this up on my way there, Saul is going around persecuting Christians. He's on his way to Damascus. He's got what he thinks is the plan for his life. So he is persecuting Christians. By law, he's allowed to do it. He's allowed to pull them out. He's allowed to put them in prison. He's allowed to murder them. He's allowed to do all these things. So he can, by law, do what he's doing. So he's on his way to Damascus to get rid of the people, to get rid of these Christians. And we're going to pick it up in verse 10. Now, when I start, and as we're going through this, I want you to place yourself in that moment. Put yourself there for a second. And then start to really think about what's going on. So everybody knows who Saul is. Everybody knows what his job is. He is not somebody it's like, hey, who's that guy? Tim what? No, everybody knows who Saul is. Verse 10. In Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision. Ananias, I like to think he was real chipper when he responded, yes, Lord. He's excited, right? It's an exciting time. He said, yes, Lord. And the Lord told him, go to the house of Judas on Straight Street. Ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul. What, Lord? I like how God tries to move things. Everybody knew him as Saul of Tarsus, but God kind of flips his name a little bit to try to throw him off. Yeah, there's this guy. It's not a big deal. Just go and ask for him because he's waiting for you. This doesn't really seem like a logical plan to me. Now I'm reading this and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what Ananias was really thinking when he was told what to do. What was he thinking? Because it doesn't seem logical. He's in a great moment. He's praying. Everything's super holy. Been in that moment before. Maybe when you're driving, you're playing some worship music until somebody cuts you off and you turn the worship music off. As if Jesus can't hear what you're about to say. You're like, Jesus is not at the center of this. and then you turn it back on after you said what you needed to say? Ever called somebody a moron and you both pulled into Faith Church? Traffic is tough for me. I'm getting better. My wife failed miserably the other 2 days ago. I got to tell on her. We're driving. I knew I had to preach this weekend. Somebody cut us off on Highway 64. I said, Jesus. She's like, where's that moron doing? I said, forgive her, Lord. She knows not what she's doing. Separate the wheat and the tare. I'm just kidding. Where was I before I lied? So you have this dream and vision. This doesn't seem logical, right? He's asking Ananias, I want you to go pray for a man who has every right to kill you. He has every right to throw you in prison. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to go there. Sometimes the plan that God gives us doesn't seem logical. I would forgive this person, God, but you have no idea what they did to me. God says, I want you to pray for the person who's done you wrong. So you just walk up and you say, I got you. Kill him, Jesus. Just make it quick. I don't want them to suffer, but kill them, Lord. But God is asking, and sometimes it doesn't seem logical. I was talking to a lady who had been through a horrible time, been through abuse with her husband, been through terrible stuff, and she came up to me and she said, hey, I really feel like I just need to forgive him and let it go. And I said, then that's what you need to do. And she said, yeah, but it doesn't make sense for me to do that. And I said, God's not worried about your logic, because sometimes the things that doesn't make sense up here make all the sense up there. So look at Ananias' response. Remember, he was excited at first, right? Yes, Lord. Pick me, Jesus. Verse 13, first words. Lord, Ananias answered. I'm going to give you the PQC, the Philip Quinton Clemens version of this real quick. Basically, he's going to say, are you nuts, Jesus? Do you know what he can do to me? Are you aware of what's going on? I want you to forgive that person. Have you ever argued with God and said, yeah, but you don't understand what they did to me? If you had to deal with those people, you would be thinking the same way. I've got mad in traffic before, and then I've had to say, God, if you would drove, you've never drove before, so you don't know how this is. You never got behind a wheel of a car. You don't know what this is like. Maybe you used a camel. We know you used a donkey, but for the most part, you walked. God's response is, you're kind of acting like a donkey right now. So I guess I'm using both. But have you ever been there before where you're kind of arguing and you make excuses of why we can't do what God's asked us to do? Well, no, I can't do that. Because he's got a great point, if you think about this. He's got a really good point. He's got a great point to say, hey, he's killing people. I don't know if you've thought this whole process through just yet. Because if I go there, and maybe he's not hearing the same thing you're saying, and when I get there, he may kill me. But God's not into the excuses. He's not into the arguing. He simply said, this is what I want you to do. This dream, this vision, this plan that you have on the inside of you that's burning, that thing that when you go to sleep at night, you think about it. When you wake up in the morning, you've got it. You can't get rid of it. That's that thing on the inside of you that God's saying, no, this is what I want you to do. But we can't get into this arguing with God. You know, I have two boys, one's 7 and one's 5, and I thought I was raising preachers, but I'm 99% sure they're going to be lawyers. Because they are master arguers. They are good at it. They get it from their mother. They are awesome. The youngest one, if he hangs around my wife too long, he starts acting like her. And it's like I have a 5-year-old version of a 30-year-old woman speaking to me like she sometimes has to speak to them. So the other day I said, go get your brother. It's almost time to eat. And he said, kids, right? They don't move from the spot. They think, I'll just yell it. Brandon, it's time to eat! I said, go get your brother. He walked to the bottom of the stairs. He said, Brandon, you hear me talking to you? Don't make me say it twice. It's time to eat. My wife got home. I said, don't hang around him anymore. You're done. Can't take it. The other day, I told him, I said, go clean your room. It's a simple task, right? Go clean your room. So they go upstairs. They start to clean the room. I can hear them jumping around, playing. They come down about 3 or 4 minutes later, both of them together. I guess, you know, they had good defense. So they come downstairs. And my oldest son looks at me. I said, didn't I tell you to clean the room? He said, Dad, it's really dirty. I said, I know. I'm well aware of that. That's why I told you to go clean it. Okay. So they're going up the stairs, slowly come upstairs. About 2-3 minutes later, the youngest one starts coming down. The oldest one is smart enough to use the youngest to get what he needs. So he comes walking down the stairs. I'm thirsty. As if somehow in these last 2 minutes, I'm going to have eased up on what the task that I've asked you to do. I'm thirsty. I said, go get a drink. He walks into the kitchen, gets a drink, comes back. I love you. I said, I love you too, man. He said, no, Dad, I really love you. I said, I love you too. He said, what are you watching? I was just watching TV. He said, I'd like to watch TV with you. I said, you know what? You should, hold up. Today, sir, get up there and clean that room. He's like, all right. Like, it didn't work. And I can hear the oldest one at the top of the stairs waiting. And then all of a sudden you hear a, like, it didn't work. But they're masters at arguing. They're good at giving excuses of why they can't do it. Listen, this dream, this vision on the inside of you, if this thing was able to be accomplished on your own, it's not really that big for God. Because God's got a big plan. He's got a big vision. He can see this whole thing mapped out. You know, when you're on the walking down the street, you can see the ants and you can see all the bugs and you can see everything when you're on the street. But when you are 30,000 feet in the air, it looks like a masterpiece puzzle. You can't see all the problems. You're not going through all the problems. But you can see that that road is going to take a right-hand turn and then it's going to go straight again. Sometimes we're on this road and we're walking and we can't see what God sees. So therefore, we start to worry about the things that are going on. And God's like, hey, chill. I got this whole thing. It's going to make a right and then a left, and you're going to be right where you need to go. But we can't make excuses to not do what God's asked us to do. One time, God asked me to do something. I said, there's no way I can do that. No way. Not going to happen. So I started making excuses of to why. Lord said, you can either make excuses or make moves, but you can't do both. You can either move towards the goal and the plan and the vision I've set before you, or you can stay right here and keep making all the excuses in the world of why it's not going to work. Why there's no way that this can happen. Yeah, but you don't know the background that I came from. Yeah, but you don't know what my family tree. Yeah, but you don't have this. And yeah, but you don't have that. I don't have all those things. And I don't know all those things. But I'm telling you, you serve a big God, a great God, a miraculous God that can take, he can take the smallest. Well, I'm not qualified to do that. I would never apply for that job because I'm not qualified to do that job. God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. So we can't look at it and say, no, there's no way, we can't do that. Because if you're making a move towards where you want to end up, you'll stop making excuses as to why it can't happen. Remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So all we got to do is just keep walking. If I'm moving in one direction, I'm not staying put. So we've got to keep that momentum going forward. We've got to keep moving forward and just taking this walk. Yes, we may have received the vision. Maybe we're arguing. We're going back and forth. I have a family member of mine who's about in the mid-60s, and they said, hey, there's no way that I could make any more money. This is all the money I'm ever going to make. This is it. I said, do you realize that Warren Buffett accumulated 3/4 of his wealth after the age of 50? Warren Buffett's got a lot of money. Would you agree? How many of you like to have just a little bit of Warren Buffett's money? Those people that didn't raise your hand, are you crazy? But what can happen is we can get so caught up in doing what everyone else does that we get what everyone else gets. And God said, listen, narrow is the gate. Wide leads to destruction. It may not be death. It may not be all of that. But what it may mean is wide leads to the destruction of your finances, your dreams, your everything else. But narrow is the gate to say, hey, I'm not going to pay attention to all of that. I'm going to keep walking. I'm going to fix my eyes on Jesus, and I'm going to keep heading in that direction. Verse 15, the Lord said to Ananias, go. He had kind of had enough of the conversation. You ever been there with your kids? You tell them to do something, tell them to do something, and then finally you're just like, go now. There's something in your voice. My mom never had to have the voice. She just had that one crazy eye. You laugh, but if you'd have got that eye, it'd have scared you too. At 37, it wakes me up in the middle of the night sometimes. But he says, go, go. And so now in verse 17, it says, then Ananias went to the house. Then Ananias went. So now we see another stop on this journey, this walk. Now he's actually making the walk. Now, I don't know how far this walk was. Maybe it was a block. Maybe it was 2 blocks. Maybe it was 5 miles. But if I'm on that walk, this is the longest walk of my life. I'm taking my sweet time. Have you ever, when you were a kid and your parents said, go to your room, and you knew that that meant that they were going to spank you as soon as they got to your room? Talking about, what is it, like 6 people got spanked when they were a kid? No, that ain't true. But there were 13 stairs that I had to walk up to go to my room. I still remember that at the age of 37, and I could take you back to that house, and I could tell you if they haven't messed with anything, I could tell you where all the little creaks and sounds are in every single one of those stairs. Because when I would hear my dad walking up those stairs, it was the longest time of my life. I repented for things I didn't even do. You know what I'm talking about? Especially if you had older siblings. You were just like, man, if they did something wrong, you ended up taking the whooping for it for no reason. Like, didn't I tell you to come over to school? I did. Well, which? We have 4 kids. Which? You know what? Forget it. I'm spanking all 4 of you. I'm like, are you kidding me? Can we vote at least? And I was the youngest. I was the youngest of 4. So I tried to use, by the time my parents got to me, I was hoping they were going to be wore out. But I think what they figured out was everything they did wrong with the first 3. So they're like, this one will make sure he knows. So I never got away with anything. But that walk was oftentimes the longest walk. It was a long walk. I'm thinking as Ananias is taking this walk, he's thinking to himself like we have before. Did I hear from God? I think I heard from God. I really hope I heard from God. You ever got ready to send a text to somebody? Not a mean one. But you get ready to send a text. Maybe God's like, hey, you just need to forgive that person. Just let it go. Tell them good morning. And you're like, I don't want to tell this person good morning. I like to tell them good night. Knock him out. But you're like, But you're like, is that God? Maybe it's the devil. I like to think when Ananias was praying and God said, go, it may have been his wife that was in the other room and they just got in an argument. She's like, go to Saul's house, you jerk. Seems weird, Lord, you would call me that. Some of you will get that later. So that walk. But I noticed that before he went on that walk, he never said anything to anyone. Because let's be honest, if me and you were in that situation and you came up to me and said, hey, God just told me to go pray for a guy who's killing everybody, I'm going to say, you better make sure that that's God before you go down there, because he can legally kill you. But if you notice, Ananias never says anything to anyone. Why? Because negative people will drain the faith that God has spoke to you right out of you. Has someone ever wore you out before you ever had a conversation with them? Now we're getting somewhere. You're going to be at the barbecue tomorrow, and you know that one person that you can't share your dream with because they are the dream killer. They drain you. Before you ever have a conversation, you're already tired. No matter what you say, they combat it with something else. Hey, it's a beautiful day out. Yeah, but it's going to rain. This food's good. Yeah, I've had better. It's usually the person who's been married 8 times that has the best marriage advice. You know what I'm talking about. It's like one time I was in Walmart. Shouldn't have said the name, but the store's horrible. But anyway, so it's like 2 registers to the whole store. Now they put self-checkout in, which means, hey, we know we weren't helping you before, so help yourself. And we do it. I'm not fighting that line. I'll bag my own groceries. I'm like, why? Do I get a portion of your check? Like, how does this work? You've rolled back prices so much, I'm working for you. I don't go to McDonald's and make my own burger. Sorry, little tangent. Anyway, so I'm in Walmart, and these 2 people are arguing in front of me. They're telling me about the world's economy and how they can fix it. And the only thing my mind could think is, the line says 20 items or less, and you have 50. You can't even count to 20. How are you going to fix the world's economy? But it's usually the people that act like they know so much, and there's negativity that drains you so bad. And if you say, I'm never around those negative people, I don't know what you're talking about, you may be the negative person. Like, that's why no one talks to me when I come walking up. Makes sense. That's why I love our iConnect group so much, because I see when people get around like-minded people and you start thinking the way other people think, and they start to infuse your dream and they start to pump up your dream in these iConnect groups, then all of a sudden, then you start to feel better. And then you're like, you know what? I can accomplish that dream. I can do this. I can do that. You have to surround yourself with the right people. You know, my wife, when she begged me to marry her, this went on for years. Nah, I'm just kidding. She's wonderful. She's amazing. She's also the most forgiving person on the planet, I hope. But anyway, I remember when I went to go marry, to propose to my wife, which is funny, because when I went to propose to her, I said, hey, will you marry me? And she started crying, and she said, is that for me? And I'm like, well, that really all depends on what you're about to say. Because if it's no, I'm just going to go ahead and get up and walk off. But when I was with her, I had people that said, hey, I don't know if that's the right person for you. Hey, I don't know if that's the right person for you. But I knew that this was the right person for me. So I had to push out those people that were negative and get around the people that said, yeah, you found a God-fearing woman. That's who you need to stay with. She always tells me, too, she's like, when we first met, you never had any game whatsoever. I said, must have had something because I got you. I do, though. She used to tell me all the time. She said, don't date white guys. I don't date white guys. I said, if you ever change your mind, give me a call. Right there. Back to Jesus. Verse 17, then Ananias went into the house and entered it, he placing his hands on Saul, and he said, Brother Saul. Notice that Ananias addressed him as Brother Saul. I believe that God put that in there to let us know that no matter what we've done, the mistakes we've made, those things that we think are bad, the things that we think are horrible, the, all these things, God's not concerned with our past at all. He's only concerned with the future that he has for each and every single one of us. So he addresses him as Brother Saul. He accepts him automatically. Now listen, you're not going to see anything else about Ananias throughout the rest of the Bible. This is it. This is his 15 minutes of fame. This is all he does. But I want to tell you that in this walk that he had, from his walk of receiving what God had planned for him, this dream, this vision that he had, then he had to kind of get in this little argument. And then he kept walking. And because of his obedience to what God asked him to do, Saul would become Paul and write 2/3 of the New Testament that would impact millions upon millions, and to this day is impacting millions upon millions upon millions of people. From one man saying, wait a second, this doesn't seem like a logical dream. This doesn't seem like this will work. But God's plan is so much bigger. If we just walk in the obedience that he's asked us to do, his plan is so much larger. That day with my kids, when I told them to go clean their room, what they didn't realize is once their room was clean, I was taking them out to lunch. And when I told them, when they got done and they came down and they said, Dad, we're done cleaning our room, I said, cool, let's go to lunch. My oldest said, if you would have told us that, we would have cleaned the room much quicker. Here's my point. What is on the other side of the obedience that God is asking us to do? What's on that other side? Yeah, we may not understand it. Yeah, we may not think it's logical. Yeah, we may think it's crazy. Starting this business, tithing, I don't understand. What do you want me to do, God? Getting involved in the church, serve, getting an iConnect group? I don't understand. What's on the other side of that business? If you get involved in an iConnect group and then you meet somebody who meets somebody who meets somebody who then infuses your dream, and then you look back and say, thank God that I obeyed God then, because had I not obeyed God then, I wouldn't be here now. Isaiah 1:19 says, if you're willing and obedient, you'll eat the good of the land. If you're willing and obedient. It may not seem like it's, oh, I don't think I could ever forgive him. Forgive him and see what God has planned for you. Well, I don't think that I could ever let it go. Let it go and see what God has planned for you. Yeah, this tithing, this 10%, tithe and see what God won't do. Because here's what happens. When you start to do that, God starts to infuse on your dream, and he starts to build your dream. And when God gets involved, it's Ephesians 3:20, abundantly and above all you could ever ask or think. Every head bowed and every eye closed. If you're in here today or you're joining us online, and you say, you know what, Pastor Phil, today's message, this was for me. I had to hear it. I knew this was a message I had to do. I've been on this walk. Maybe I've received this vision, or maybe I've been in this argument a little bit. I've been making excuses of why I couldn't do it. And now I'm walking, but things are kind of crazy, but I'm just going to keep walking. If you're that person, any one of those people, I want you to raise your hand right where you're at so I can pray for you today. And you online as well. There's hands going up all over. Father, I just thank you for each and every single person. God, I ask you to give them strength, to give them wisdom, to give them the direction that they're craving from you. God, we'll obey what you ask us to do. And by doing that, we know that you have something big for us. You have something major for us in our future. And we may not see it now, but that's not going to stop us from walking towards what you have for us. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. We will